Okay, we are going to begin Arlan Yer Sefer Mishlei as one of the Ketuvim by first understanding the placement of Sefer Mishlei within Tanakh. And by that I mean two different aspects of appreciating any Sefer. One is to put it within its contextual context or surroundings, and the other is obviously to place it also in its correct historical context. So before we begin by understanding Mishlei with regard to Ketuvim, we first have to understand the distinction between what's known as the tripartite division of Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, and Ketuvim. Right? If you would meet someone in the street and they would ask you, okay, what are you doing all day? Oh, I'm learning Torah. Define Torah, right? As in Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Can anyone do that?
The five books given to Moshe by God.
Beautiful, right? And therefore, the questions that you ask are ultimately what types of questions? When we ask questions on Torah. Why did God put this here? Why did God phrase it this way? What's the juxtaposition between this one and that? Excellent. How about Nevi'im? How would you define the works of Nevi'im?
Divinely inspired works.
Divinely inspired works of?
Prophets.
Excellent. Beautiful. And now whose words are these then?
These are
the words of the prophets, right? So we believe that they're based on messages of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but these are basically the words of the prophets, and therefore questions that we ask include, why did the Navi decide to phrase this message in such a way? What devices is this Navi employing? Why is he sarcastic here? I'm obviously thinking of Amos. And why is he going to be repeating these motifs over and over again? So these are some of the questions of Nevi'im. How about Ketuvim? How would you define Ketuvim to someone?
Books written throughout the years that were chosen to be included within.
Beautiful. So we're going to talk about the process of canonization very soon. But works that were chosen and were written by whom?
Also, I think Nevi'im.
Different. Not so some of them Nevi'im, excellent, and they could be also multiple authors. Beautiful. And so much so that Chazal say the Ketuvim were written in Ruach HaKodesh as opposed to Ruach Nevuah, as opposed to some direct message that's given between God and a prophet. These are more divinely inspired. Can anyone explain what divine inspiration is? Anyone here ever experienced divine inspiration? Don't be embarrassed. Yeah. Okay, because even if we don't have Nevuah today, again, we do have Ruach HaKodesh today, and this is important to keep in mind. Some say that Rashi wrote his Perush for Ruach HaKodesh. I remember reading, again, and learning the Rambam, who writes about the Ketuvim being written in Ruach HaKodesh, as Chazal explained, and he defines it even as a certain also moral aptitude and sensitivity that allows for, again, messages to be clearer to a person. And I remember thinking of the Scarlet Letter. How many of you have read the Scarlet Letter? Okay, how many of you have learned Habakkuk? There, that was just an educational musar that I was trying to give you. Okay, in any case, back to the Scarlet Letter. Do you remember one of the last scenes Dimmesdale is writing his confession speech for all those who didn't read Scarlet Letter? I'm about to kind of ruin it for you. He dies at the end of the speech. But basically, as he's writing it, he says, even though he is writing the words, he feels that Anna, his hand may be moving the pen, but the words are coming from God. And I remember thinking, that's how the Rambam more or less defines Ruach HaKodesh. So basically, he's explaining Ruach HaKodesh is an expression of ideas that the author himself may have. So when we talk, for example, about Sefer Mishlei, we're going to speak about the author, whom Chazal, by the way, attribute to Shlomo HaMelech. And we're going to speak about Shlomo's ideas that he is going to be expressing, but we believe that he expressed them in a state of divine inspiration, right? That he felt almost imbued either in these talents by God, in knowledge of God, which, by the way, by Shlomo HaMelech makes a tremendous amount of sense because we know that Hashem did grant him a significant level of chokhmah, and in the famous story in Sefer Melachim when he's in Giv'on. But back to the Ketuvim for a moment, the Abarbanel disagrees with this definition of Ruach HaKodesh and explains that and Ruach HaKodesh is more a way of defining a sefer, not necessarily the way that the author wrote that sefer, but a sefer that was canonized later chronologically, which brings us now to a little bit of the historical context of the Ketuvim, or for that matter, the entire process of canonization, namely how each one of the Svarim became part of what we call a canon, which is an entire work and a corpus of literature. In our case, when we speak about the Jewish canon, the canon that was defined by, more or less, Anshei Knesset HaGdola, the corpus of Jewish law during the time period of Ayacheni. We know that there is more or less a completed canon already by the first century BCE, so that means about 300 years into the building of the second Beit HaMikdash. So we're in the second Commonwealth era when we already have 24 Svarim that are chosen to be Sifrei Kodesh. What does that mean? It's not as if we're not learning anything else, but these are the Svarim that are going to be perpetuated by the Kohanim, who are the dominant teachers during that time in the Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, there's a special term that these Svarim have based on a Gzeira of Chazal. Anyone know what term I'm referring to? Excellent. A Sefer Shemetame Yatayadayim. Wonderful Dvorah, wherein Chazal discussed that any sefer that is going to be kept in the Beit HaMikdash automatically is going to defile the hands as a gzeira, so that Kohanim won't keep their truma by the Svarim, lest rodents come, and in the end, obviously, are going to ruin the Svarim. And therefore, to deter Kohanim from doing this, is that these Svarim are going to be makabel truma, and not through your yadayim, and therefore, you don't want to keep truma, because if you eat truma betuma, then you're chayav nita. So, again, play it safe. And according to, as I mentioned already, the Abar Benel, he says these Svarim, again, that are going to be included then in the canon, the later they are, even if they're written by the same author, the later they're included, that's what automatically is not going to give them necessarily a status of Nebuah, but rather that of Ruach HaKodesh. And how did this process take place? Again, it was a very gradual process. We can imagine that throughout all the years, Chamisha Chumshei Torah were very popular. Again, certainly you should hope they are. Hashem tells Yehoshua, you can't enter into Eretz Yisrael without knowing Vahagita bo yomam v'layla, that you have to engross always in Chamisha Chumshei Torah. These are obviously the greatest of the works as dictated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But even Nevi'im, there were certain Nevi'im that a priori were more popular than others by virtue of the fact that they were Nevi'ei HaMelech, that they deliver nationally oriented Nevuot. Whereas more parochially oriented Nevuot, again, basically fell by the wayside. And also Nevuot that had already expired. If they had already come true, then they also weren't so popular. Chazal Masechet Megillah tell us, Nevuah shehutzrecha ledarot, uchtava Nevuah shelo hutzrecha ledarot, lo nechtava, again, was not as preserved. And this is more or less how we have the selection of Nevi'im that we have, even though we know that during the same time period there were other sects, right, other cults that included Prakim of Tanakh, that many of the Prushim, that many of the Chachamim during that time did not necessarily include. How do we know this, by the way?
We found them.
Excellent. In Qumran, and the famous, what are known as the Dead Sea Scrolls, and which have Prakim of Nevuot, particularly Yeshayahu, that aren't canonized in our Tanakh, which is quite fascinating, which brings us now to the Ketuvim. Can you imagine the challenge that faced the sages of the time? And which of the general works written by authors over the course of hundreds of years should we include, and which ones should we not include? So what did they use as a barometer or as a litmus test for inclusion? And certain messages that they felt are going to be necessary for times, whether they're historical messages, which form am I thinking of when I think of historical messages that should be perpetuated? Ezra, Nehemiah, Daniel. And even if Daniel is more eschatologically oriented, and maybe there, and the messages of, of different aspects of love, right? I'm thinking of Shir HaShirim, which in itself is going to be debated, or philosophy in Kohelet, but certainly messages of Mishle, right? For those who have learned Mishle, Mishle is going to deal with ethical behavior. And even though the Torah itself, and we're going to speak as we learn Mishle, with regard to differences and similarities between messages that are given in the Torah with regard to moral development and behavior and those that are given in Sefer Mishle, even if there are similarities, the style is going to be very different. As a matter of fact, the term itself of Mishle tells us that the genre of literature is going to be very unique. So we're going to speak about what a mashal is in just a moment. But before we go on, let's try to place Mishle, now that we have it in a more or less a contextual, right, setting within the works of Sifrei Tanakh, let's try to understand it also with regard to the authorship. So Chazal teach us in the Midrash on Kohelet that one aspect of Shlomo writing this, which is based, by the way, on Masechet Bava Batra, Daf Yudalet Amud Bet, which we're going to get to in just a moment. But the Midrash Rabbah on Kohelet Parsha Aleph tells us, Miyad vayavo Yushalayim vayamod lefnei Hashem vayal olotu shlamim vayas mishter l'chol avadav. This is right after Shlomo assumes the monarchy, and he goes to where the primary Mizbech, the Mizbech HaNechoshet, was for the years beforehand, namely in Givon. And this is where he experiences a dream, which one can even argue is a form of Ruach HaKodesh, where he experiences a dream wherein Hashem and now comes to him and iterates the promise that had been given to David HaMelech. And Shlomo asks for Chachma Lishpot, for wisdom particularly to judge, to be able to judge people. And Hashem says, wow. And now the fact that Shlomo asked for this, I'm going to give him, obviously, the Chacham al-Shvot, and we know also great honor and wealth as well. Anna, when Shlomo, after being granted this request, comes back to Yerushalayim, what does he do? He offers more karbanot and he makes a whole mishnah l'avada. By the way, this is a very important source because Amar Rav Yitzchak Mikancho Sin Su'uda L'gam Rashal Torah. From here we learn that whoever finishes some aspect of Torah makes a big party. Right? So here Shlomo learned it, or we learn it from Shlomo's experience. Miyad Sherta Alav Ruach HaKodesh. You can imagine he's on this religious spiritual high and he had Ruach HaKodesh at that very moment, which seems to be a continuation of the Ruach HaKodesh of the dream that he just had. V'amar Shlosha Sfarim Halalu Mishle V'shir HaShirim V'Kohelet. Notice that according to Chazal, Shlomo wrote all three of these in one sitting. Right? When we know there's a definite time, we can mark. And this parsha in Malachim Aleph, Perek Bet, we can already say right here, this is when Shlomo receives some level of Ruach HaKodesh. It must be that this is when he writes these works of Ruach HaKodesh. Hadahu Dachtiv, Devrei Kohel Ben David. How do we know that all three of these are attributed to Shlomo? Well, let's see. Shir HaShirim Asher L'Shlomo, Mishlei Shlomo. And even though it never says Kohelet, again, was written by Shlomo, but it does say Kohelet Ben David, Asher, and then later on in Pasuk in Aleph, it says again, this is written by Ben David, Kohelet, who himself was a king of Yerushalayim, the only son of David, who himself was a king, was obviously Shlomo. And these then are the three Sfarim that are attributed to Shlomo HaMelech. So according to the first source, we see that, wow, he wrote all three, more or less at the beginning of his career. However, the Medrash Rabban Shir HaShirim tells us not necessarily. Right here, Chazal are trying to tell us that they're all linked to this level of Ruach HaKodesh, but Rav Yonatan Amar, Shir HaShirim Katav Tchila, V'achar Kach Mishlei, V'achar Kach Kohelech, Umayti Lei Rav Yonatan. How does Rav Yonatan know this order? Midarech Haaretz, from the way that people live. Kshadam Na'ar, when he's young, a person says Divrei Zimmer, he'll sing romantic words, works of love poetry. That's Shir HaShirim. Higdil, he gets a little older. Omer Divrei Mishalot, he speaks about different proverbs, right, different sayings. Basically, he's going to work on his PhD thesis on educational development. His kin, and then towards the end of his life, then Divrei Havalim, then he writes Tuesdays with Mori, or in other words, Kohelet. Rav Yannai, Chamoy de Rav Ami Amar, HaKomodim, SheKohelet B'Sof Amara. What Rav Yannai is coming to qualify is, okay, everyone agrees that Kohelet was written last, but he's alluding to the fact that it's unclear whether Shir HaShirim was written first or Mishlei is written first. And this obviously sheds light on the different type of perspective that one would have in learning both Mishlei and Shir HaShirim respectively. If I say that he wrote Shir HaShirim first, then I'm saying that Shir HaShirim is more of a youthful expression of love, and Mishlei is more his PhD thesis. If I say that he wrote Mishlei first and Shir HaShirim more in the older years of his life, the maturing years, then I should say that Shir HaShirim is not necessarily a youthful expression of love, but a much more mature understanding of love. And Mishlei perhaps is really just his own experiences, looking back and noting then, as he's still in his educational career, certain lessons that he has learned from this. And based on the Gemara itself, we're going to see a very interesting insight of Rashi. Rashi learns from the order that of authorships that are mentioned in Bava Batra, Daf Yud Dalet Amud Bet. For those who just, to remind you of the context of this Gemara, the Gemara is talking in Bava Batra in general about laws of chazaka and possession, and talks about what happens if one person has one sefer of Chamisha Chumshei Torah and another has another sefer, right? Is that considered, right, and you put this farm together, is that considered one sefer? So too, how do we understand the relationship between not just Chamisha Chumshei Torah, but Torah and Nevi'im, Nevi'im and Ketuvim? So then, the Amoraim, or actually it's the Tanaim who list the order of the Ketuvim, root the sefer Tehillim, the Iov, Mishlei, Kohelet, Shir HaShirim, V'kinot Daniel Megillat Esther, Ezra V'Divrei HaYamim. Notice then the chronology. Right, well, Ruth is attributed to which author? Okay, so I'll tell you, Sefer Shmuel HaNavi, Tehillim to David, right? Which, interestingly then, to place Eov there, because there are all different explanations as to the chronology of Eov. Mishlei, Kohelet, Shir HaShirim, what's the common denominator? Well, attributed to Shlomo, we already saw. And then keynotes attributed to Yirmiyahu. So take a look at this. Rashi says, isn't that interesting then that Shir HaShirim is written last? Maybe that's because he says Amaro Le'itzik Nato. Maybe he actually said Shir HaShirim last, in which case maybe Kohelet and Mishlei in the earlier stages of his life, probably Mishlei then earlier. But our sense is that Mishlei was written towards the beginning stages of Shlomo's life, or I should say either the beginning or the middle, which is an expression more of his own experience of education. And we're going to see how every mechanich then should really be learning Mishlei not only to grasp some of the beautiful ideas that one can extrapolate from the Sefer, but also to gain insight as to the methodology of learning and of ethical behavior. So we're going to speak a little bit about Kohlbrenner and psychology as we learn Mishlei. Aren't you all excited?
Yeah.
Okay, just making sure. Okay, let's end now with one last idea that certainly is consistent with the presentation of the Abarbanel. In Avot Rabbi Natan, Chazal explained, "Barishona hayu omrim Mishlei v'shehashirim v'kalchala gnuzim hayu." And the question then, based on that Barbanel, is, wait a second, you're going to say that the term of Ruach HaKodesh is offered to those Sfarim that are only canonized at a later date, i.e. after the Nevi'im, meaning Tzkufa Bayit Sheni, but that's so strange when it comes to the writings of Shlomo, because Shlomo wrote it during Tzkufa Bayit Rishon. But that Barbanel can easily turn to the source, which says, even though Shlomo wrote it during the beginnings of Bayit Rishon, Gnuzim Hayu, what happened to them shortly after he wrote them? They did not become instant bestsellers. You know why? They were extremely esoteric. They all contain mishalim, shemayu omrim mishalot. And people, therefore, really didn't understand them. Certainly, Shir HaShirim seems at first glance like erotic love poetry. We are not going to put that on the top Kitvei HaKodesh list. Again, Mishlei, so esoteric. Kohelet apikorsut. Right? And therefore, enam min haktuvim vamdu v'gindu otam, it's only during Tzkufa Bayit Sheni, after the canonization of Nevi'im already, that Chazal are going to say, you know what, there's tremendous depth to these Sfarim, and as long as you learn them in the proper manner, then they really do have a tremendous amount to teach us. But now we're going to take a look at the very interesting genre, particularly of Mishlei, which also helps us understand why all three of these Sfarim perhaps were temporarily put in hiding, ganuz, or put on the back shelf until they became more popular. And that's going to be because Mishlei, more than Shir HaShirim, or more than Kohelet even, incorporates the, both quantitatively and qualitatively, the most number of mishalim. Right? So what is a mashal? Right? Whenever we use the term, what does a mashal actually mean?
An allegory.
It's an allegory. Excellent. Right? As a matter of fact, Anna Sefer Mishlei is going to have numerous allegories that are supposed to be meant to teach us lessons. But in Tanakh, we find that a mashal is much broader than a simple allegory. It could also mean, think of Parshat Balak, Vayusam Mishalo Vayomar. A mashal could also be in a simple way of speaking, an eloquent way of speaking, right? As Rashi understands, a very sophisticated way of speaking, right? Nevi'im speak with Mishalim. And not only as an actual allegory, meaning using some type of a parable or analogy, right? And all of these are called Mishalim in Tanakh. Analogies, allegories, parables. And it can even be, and a basic metaphor is called a mashal. And certainly a sophisticated way of speaking as well. We're going to find all different types of Mishalim contained within Sefer Mishlei. And as soon as you open up Sefer Mishlei, you'll already find that the term of mashal is going to go hand in hand with chokhmah, right? With also teaching words of wisdom. Now, when we think of wisdom as well in Tanakh, again, one has to remember this is not just how well do you score on your SATs or psychometry, right? The term chokhmah in Tanakh has many different usages. We see this also by Bilam. It can mean, yes, intelligence. It could also mean craftsmanship. It could also mean, again, a chokhmah can be a hobby. It can be a skill. And a chachma could also be a manner of speech, right? A chachma sometimes could be used even in a sarcastic form, right? As a smart aleck, right? So all of these are going to be different ideas that we're going to find in Mishlei, and we're going to see that based on the context, we'll be able to understand both the mashal and this terminology of chachma. But we're going to begin with a little bit of how to learn Sefer Mishlei. As we already noticed, most people don't open up the Sefer, or if they do, they learn a piecemeal, right? They'll open up and say, oh, this is so beautiful. What nice idea. And now that we find Shema b'ni Musar Avicha v'yalti tosh tarati mecha, or everyone's familiar with the middle to end of Perek Lamed Aleph, the very last Perek in Sefer Mishlei, of Eshet Chayel Miyam Savra Chof Mipnini Mechra. What generally happens, though, is that it's very difficult to learn the entire Sefer Al HaSefer. So here we have a wonderful challenge before us. And the reason for the challenge is because it seems after a while that the messages are somewhat repetitive. And therefore, it is imperative that as we learn Sefer Mishlei together, we understand that Mishlei is not meant to be learned, nor is it meant to be read in a continuous fashion, because it wasn't written that way. And how do we know this? Not only and is it not called Sefer Mashal or HaMashal, it's Mishlei, right? It's a collection of many different Mishalim, that are going to span different genre of literature, as we already discussed, with different educational ideas. But the Sefer itself is organized in such a way that we understand that it was written as kvatzim, right? A kovetz is a collection. A collection of, it can be pitgamim, of adages, of proverbs, of sayings, but also of different speeches. And we're going to see that there are many collections, both of speeches and of proverbs, and we're going to speak about the differences between them. But even just with your Tanakh open, take a look. In our introduction now, we're already going to see how these mishalim were created. Firstly, to recognize that a mashal, just as we use today, can anyone tell me, how is a mashal created? How is an idea, an allegory created, an image, a metaphor? Where do we even pull the resources to be able to, in today's day and age, right, write our own sonnets, again, our own poetic similes, our own mishalim?
Personal experience.
From our own experience, from our own realia, and basically from different cultural associations that we have, and therefore, it is also going to be significant as we continue to learn Sefer Mishlei to pay attention both to the structure and to the context of every one of the Mishalim to try to see the various associations with other places in Tanakh. Mm.